Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I am Justin Nasiri, and for those of you who have listened to the show before, you know that usually I interview military veterans about their civilian career. My intention is to show that veterans can do absolutely anything, any career possibly imaginable, but also to show that most people underestimate what it takes to do anything. And so to talk with veterans, have them share more about what they do for a career, explain that to an active duty audience, and then talk about how they got there, common ways to get there, and advice to other veterans who may want to follow in their footsteps. Today, we are going to be talking about skills beyond the uniform. We'll take a break from the traditional interview format. And for episode number 150, what an incredible milestone. I appreciate all of your support, listening, encouraging me, and helping the Beyond the Uniform community get to this incredible milestone. I actually wanted to talk about something I was hesitant to talk about, but I think would be really, really good to dive into, and that is silent meditation retreats. The timeliness of this is that I just got back a few days ago from my fourth week-plus-long silent meditation retreat. And I wanted to talk about that because I think it could be really helpful for many veterans, and it's been incredibly powerful for me. It's been a very big part of my life the last 4 or 5 years, so I wanted to share that with the Beyond the Uniform audience. As always, in the show notes at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find links to everything we talk about, a rough transcript for this episode, and an opportunity for you to leave a positive iTunes review, which would be greatly, greatly appreciated. So with that, we'll dive in. And the agenda, just to kind of set the stage here, is I thought of breaking this up into four parts. The first part is just going to be a very quick, abbreviated background on meditation, what it is, at least to me. I know everyone probably has different experiences, but what meditation is. And then we'll dive into part two, which is why you, as a member of the active duty or as a veteran, might consider a silent meditation retreat. Part three, I'll share my experience with meditation retreats. We'll talk about the structure, what it is, how it works. And then part four will end just briefly with some resources if you're curious to learn more. So part one, background on meditation. Dan Libby in episode 123 talked about the Veterans Yoga Project, and he talked about meditation in that. He even went through a brief exercise around meditation, which is, you know, in my view, very closely linked to yoga. So just to avoid being redundant, everything I say in this episode is just my experience and my point of view. And I don't want to get redundant saying that over and over again, so that's a preface for the entire episode. But it's not about religion. The retreat that I was just on had people in the group that were, there was a Christian pastor, there was many Jewish people, atheists, agnostics, pretty much every demographic, every religious belief, every lifestyle was represented in the room. And I view it much more as a tool that, regardless of your religious or non-religious beliefs, can really help you to lead a more fulfilled life. At essence, my experience with meditation has been it's about being present and aware of what's happening, being honest of what is going on right now in this moment. Not living in the future, you know, dreaming of what might be, planning about what to do next, also not dwelling in the past, you know, beating ourselves up over past mistakes or daydreaming about things that occurred years or days ago, but really being present and open to this moment right here and doing it as much as possible without judgment, being open to whatever the experience is right now. You know, that could be physical discomfort, that could be joy or excitement, that could be fear, that could be anger. You know, wherever you're at, you're probably experiencing something else right now. And the realization driving this is that this moment right now, when you're listening to this, this is really all we have. You know, the future and the past are really just in our minds. They don't really exist, right? They're just memories, but this moment is really all that's real. And, you know, I oftentimes find myself living on autopilot. That was one of the big realizations on my first silent meditation retreat, just really realizing how much of my life is on autopilot. I'll drive to the store, and I don't even remember when I arrive at the store. I don't even remember the road getting there. I don't remember. It's like, who was driving the car from my home to the store? Or I'll often be at dinner with my wife, and she'll be saying something, and I'm thinking about a work-related email, something I need to do, and I'm just not even there with her. I'm there physically, but not mentally. And, you know, a part of this is... you know, part of this, in my view, is you know, about being present. I didn't really even know where I was going to go with that. See, that's just a sign I wasn't being present right there. you know, it's about being fully present in each moment, curious about what's going on right now. One of the stories that jumps out to me is that when I was first introduced to meditation about 5 years ago, I watched a video by a popular person named Jon Kabat-Zinn, and he did this exercise. We did this along with the video, but he, you know, passed out a single raisin to people, and we each had our own single raisin, and you know, we put that in our mouth, and you had your tongue go over this raisin, and you feel all these little tiny crevices, and you feel the dryness of it, you feel the texture of it, and then you bite into it just once, you just bite a little bit, and you taste how much flavor there is in that raisin, and you drag out the eating of this raisin for several minutes. And the thing that struck with me is, like, man, I, you know, when I eat raisins, I eat them by the palmful, right? I'm shoveling these things into my mouth. I'm really not even tasting them. And it was a powerful exercise of a form of meditation, which is just being really present to the food you're eating, to the tastes, to noticing how your tongue moves around in your mouth as you're eating. All of these things that happen in the background so often for me, just trying to be more aware of them, try to be more focused on them rather than just, you know, daydreaming our life away. And so, you know, many people could explain this more eloquently. I'll have resources at the end of a couple books or different programs that do talk a little bit more in detail and probably more artfully about this. But I wanted to give a very brief headline and teaser and foundation for the rest of the conversation. Let me see. Anything else to cover there before we move on? No, I think that's it. So let's go on to part two, why you as a member of the armed forces or as a veteran might consider a silent meditation retreat. So this actually came up in my recent reprogramming seminar. It's one of the reasons that I thought it would actually be pertinent to bring it up on the show. As a group in reprogramming, we talked about the transition to a civilian career, and one of the ideas that came up is that a silent meditation retreat may be an extremely nice activity to do immediately after one's transition to a civilian career. I think of a friend, Jay Karaman. He's a Marine Corps Force Recon veteran. I met him at Stanford Business School. He started a nonprofit called Nuru International. And I remember from his story, he exited from the Marine Corps and he spent a year driving around San Diego in like a seafood delivery truck. And it was a year for him of just decompressing, of just really processing what had gone on in his military service and just kind of getting his bearings. I view it in a similar context. So a couple reasons, let me see, four reasons I thought of why you might want to consider this. The first is exactly that, decompression. I'll talk about next the structure of the retreat, but it's an extreme unplug. In some ways, I view it almost as a sensory deprivation tank of sorts, where you're disconnected from your daily life, from the news, from email, from texting, from phones, from just all of the things that keep me distracted in my day-to-day life, you know, most, not least of which is the phone, right? I'm waiting in line at Starbucks, I'm staring at my phone, I'm hopping in an elevator, I'm looking at my phone. Every spare second, I plug with this device, And that comes at a cost. So the first reason is this decompression. And so it might be an ideal way for many of you to take a step back and reflect on the last 3, 5, 10, 15, 20, or 30 years you spent in the military doing what less than 1% of the population does or even understands what it's like to serve in the United States military. A second reason, and this has been a powerful one for me, I view myself as a creative. It's a big part of my work and what I do. But that second reason is tapping into your intuition. And if you've listened to this podcast before, I'm sure you've heard dozens of times in interviews, veterans talking about intuition, of self-knowledge, of knowing what you want to do, really challenging your assumptions about what you should do when you get out of the military, and really paying attention to that intuition. I can think of no better way to tap into your intuition than through meditation or through these silent meditation retreats. So my experience has not been a lot about reflection on the retreats. You know, you're definitely, as we'll talk about in a little bit, just trying to be as present as possible in the moment. So you're not thinking about your life and reflecting and unpacking these things. Instead, my experience has been about calming and settling, being more aware of my mind, my body, my intuition, getting rid of a lot of the cloudiness that comes up. You know, sometimes for me, if you could picture my thoughts, it feels to me sometimes like a TV show where I don't even have the remote, where one second I'm thinking of planning, the next second I'm thinking of a memory with friends, the next second I'm imagining what it'd be like to have $1 billion, the next second I'm replaying just a dispute with someone. It's just one channel to the next without a lot of control, without even a lot of awareness. And so I view this as kind of getting rid of that cloudiness so I can actually pay better attention to my gut feel, to what's really going on in me. You know, an analogy I used often is if you've got a stream, or if you've got a shallow ocean and you go in and you stir up all the sand and the sediment, it's very, very cloudy. But if you give it enough time, all of that sediment drops to the bottom, and you've got this clear stream or this clear ocean. And that's the feeling I get on each of these retreats. It takes days. It takes 3, 4, 5 days. And you feel that mental sediment dropping, and I feel like I just see clearly for the first time, where it's not rushing from one thing to the next. It's not having my mind just flipping around from one channel to the next. It's actually dropping in and paying attention to your gut feel or whatever's going on in that moment. One quick example before I move on to the third reason. After my very first retreat, I was gone for a week and came back, ended on a Sunday, came back first thing Monday morning at a 7 a.m. call with a potential investor. And about 15 minutes into my pitch, the person made it clear that they were not going to invest for whatever reason. And what was most amazing for me in that moment was I felt a very natural reaction for me in that sort of situation, which was this, you know, tightening in my stomach, this tension in my chest, and this feeling of, great, I need to be respectful of this guy's time. I need to get off the phone. Let me just thank him and get off the phone. He can have 15 minutes back, and I don't have to be in this uncomfortable situation with someone who doesn't believe in the vision I have for my company. And it was really amazing. I mean, obviously, this happens in tenths of a second, hundredths of a second, a few seconds. And I noticed that feeling. And because I'd been in this state of being really slowed down and tied into my intuition, I realized, like, oh, nervousness is arising right now, tension and fear and embarrassment and a little bit of shame. And, you know, this is a big theme I should have talked about in the first part, but it's kind of like noticing our natural responses and then choosing, is that what we want to do? Like, my natural instinct is to hop off the phone. Is that what I want to do? Is that the most skillful reaction? And so rather than reacting, I can respond. I can respond with volition. In that case, I said, you know, okay, great. I understand you're not going to invest. Then just give it to me straight. Here's everything I'm thinking about growing my team and growing my business and marketing. And we actually talked for another 40 minutes. He gave me such incredible advice and just very candid thoughts on hiring and growing and expanding and channels. And it was so valuable for me. And I know that 99% of the time I would not have done that. And so that second thing is just tapping into your intuition. And I just want to kind of pause here to just skip back to revisit the kind of explanation around meditation. That's one piece I missed out that that's important for me is, we are my belief is we are so conditioned by our circumstances to behave a certain way. All right. I'm driving on the freeway. Someone jumps in front of me, and my immediate response, there's no thought involved here. My immediate reaction is to scream at the guy, cuss at the guy, honk at him, or cut him off. It's like a knee-jerk reaction, like when, the doctor taps on your knee and your knee kicks out. It's like that. It's like there's no volition there. There's so many things like that in my life where something happens and I've just responded in the same way thousands, hundreds of thousands of times. It's a conditioned response and it's what I would call a reaction. I'm just reacting. I'm not even thinking. What I have really loved about meditation and silent meditation retreats is building up that awareness. So like I just talked about in that story, rather than reacting blindly and without thought, you can slow yourself down to really respond in a way that's more skillful. And that might be responding in the same way, right? That might be saying like, hey, this is the way that I want to be in the world. If someone disrespects me on the road, I want to be the type of person who gets even with him. That's fine, but at least have it be a choice. And more often for me, when I've been able to catch myself, I've been able to build up a little bit of room to be able to say, okay, how do I want to skillfully deal with this? Do I want to escalate this with my wife? Or, do I want to slow down and just say, hey, that really hurt my feelings, or hey, that really upsets me, or hey, that's not going to work. That's a boundary I don't want to be crossed. Same thing at work. It's just so many different ways, but it's that difference of reaction versus responding. Okay, two more, and then we'll talk about what this actually is. So the third reason you might want to consider this is empathy. Many forms of these silent meditation retreats, many forms of meditation are great for cultivating compassion and empathy. It's something that many of the veterans on the show have cited as something that many veterans are not, it's not a strong suit for them, is being empathetic. And so this might be a way, a tactical way, a scientifically proven way to build up that empathetic muscle. And then fourth and lastly, being open to new experiences. If you have listened to some of my other episodes like this, like in the Slight Edge episode or other episodes, my view on comfort zones, that all of our growth, everything worthwhile in life comes when we are out of our comfort zone, when we're in that zone that they call the proximal development, where we are on the edge, when you're skiing down the mountain and you're just a little out of control, but still in control, and you're becoming a better skier. When you're rock climbing and you're stretching just beyond your grasp, or you're taking a route that you've never done before, that is where growth occurs. If you're playing a musical instrument and you're trying a piece that's just a little bit more difficult than you're used to, that's where the growth occurs. Not playing the same song you've played a million times and can play by heart. Not taking the same rock climbing route. Not skiing the bunny slopes all the time. Just getting yourself out of your comfort zone. And I say this because, for me, 4 years ago when I did this, my wife dragged me literally kicking and screaming to my first retreat. I was in a coffee shop doing work minutes before this thing was supposed to start and just talking about how there was no way I could leave work for a full week, there was just no way I could do that. And it was definitely out of my comfort zone. And the growth I received as a result, the reward for that, continues to pay dividends. Many of the people on the show have talked about having a budget for personal development. I wholeheartedly agree with that. Conferences, seminars, books, programs, things to challenge you, to push you further, to have you grow faster. And I would say that of all of the things, and I've done so many different things in professional and personal growth in the last 5 years, I would say that meditation and the silent meditation retreat is by far the most impactful. And I'm not alone on that. We'll talk about that in the resources. It is definitely, Google, top companies in Silicon Valley, everyone is having some form of meditation just because the proven benefit for concentration, for focus, and things like that. So that's the reasons why I would recommend you check this out. So let's dive into the bulk of this. Many of you are probably saying, what the hell is this anyways? Let's talk about part three, which is my experience with silent meditation retreats. So my path in getting here, just to lay it out in case it's a path that anyone else would want to take, and there's many ways to go. I started at UCSF. I took a course called MBSR, or Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction. It is a class that is taught using science to back up everything that you do. It's an introduction to meditation. It's an introduction to the benefits of meditation and lots of just different ways to practice it. And so I really enjoyed that. I think it's a 6 or 8 week course. I would bet money that wherever you are at in the world, there's probably an MBSR course, or you can do it online. It was a great way to get exposure and to start meditating and seeing, even in a short 20 or 30 minute duration of sitting quietly, paying attention to your breath, being aware of what's going on in your body, even just 30 minutes of that can significantly alter the way that you're viewing things, can slow you down, can calm you down, can rejuvenate you. The silent meditation retreats I started doing 4 years ago, I've done 4 of them so far, most of them 7 days, one of them 10 days. And I have found it to be by far the most rejuvenating experience in my life in a way that no vacation is. Many of you probably relate to going on vacation and coming back more exhausted when you left. I've had that experience many times. And I think there's a couple structural things about the silent meditation retreat that helps it be really recharging. So as the name implies, it's a silent meditation retreat. For me, that has meant I am in an area without cell phone coverage. My phone is off the entire time. I'm not checking email or news or apps. I'm not looking at photos on my phone. It is a hard unplug from technology. And I would bet money that even just that fact alone, if you were to go on vacation and really do that, that would do a lot for recharging. The basics are this last retreat I was on, it was with 90 people. It's at a place called Spirit Rock, which is about 30 minutes north of San Francisco. Incredible, world-renowned place. Beautiful location. And what you do is you arrive, and once you are settled in, once the seminar or the retreat starts, you make a commitment to yourself. There's not any like taskmasters, anyone enforcing this, but a commitment to yourself to remain in silence and to not speak for 1 week. And that, there are some caveats, like every day you have teachings. Well, we'll get into the daily structure in a second, but every day you have teachings and they'll have like a Q&A period. And so you can talk to ask questions, and each day you're meeting either in a group or one-on-one with one of the instructors, and you can ask them questions. And you're also, part of your activity is you do like some sort of work assignment, like cleaning pots after meals or sweeping up for a half an hour. And they have what's called functional silence. So if I'm cleaning pots and I need someone to hand me the towel, I can say, hey, can you hand me the towel? But it's just trying to be mindful of speaking. And what I have appreciated about this as an extreme introvert is I have just really reveled in the lack of small talk. That when I'm at a meal, I'm sitting there and it's, very silent. You're in a cafeteria environment with 90 people, and you're just focusing on the food. You're focusing on tasting it and chewing on it, and you're just being fully present eating. And it's not, where are you from? What do you do? How's the weather? It's trying to eliminate speech as a distraction. You know, it even extends to eye contact. You're encouraged to just kind of not make a lot of eye contact. Even that can be a form of communicating. And, you know, you make eye contact with someone, you want to smile, you think, what are they thinking? It's just distracting. But it's trying to cultivate an environment where you can look as inward as possible and you can go as deep as possible inside yourself without worrying about other people, your impact on them, their impact on you. And I hope that makes sense, but it's kind of eliminating those distractions. The structure of the day for the retreats that I've done is at 6:30 in the morning, you have, overall, we'll go through a schedule, but it's going to be alternating between seated meditation, which is probably what most of you think of when you think of meditation. You're seated, you're paying attention to your breath, you're remaining still, you're trying to just really go inward. And then alternating between that seated meditation and what's called walking meditation, which is a very original name. It's very hard to understand what that might be, right? It's just walking, you know, back and forth, just back and forth, paying attention to your feet hitting the ground, paying attention to the change in pressure on each foot as you lift up, paying attention to your body's movement. It's actually a nice contrast to seating because it's something you do in everyday life and you realize how little you pay attention to your body when you're moving. That's coincidentally one of the reasons why I think yoga is such a great complement and is such a meditative art of, you know, these movements and trying to pay attention to your breath and the feeling of your body as you move. And for many of you who might not be ready for meditation, yoga is a great gateway where you might find it more relaxing. You might be able to be more present and more aware of your body through movement and through postures and through that tension and exercise. Starting at 6:30, you would do, you know, 45 minutes or so of seated meditation. You would then go to meal, you have breakfast, you have some free time after breakfast where I try not to even take books or anything that would take me out of just being, frankly, bored, just really, really bored, really present. And 9 or 9:30, you'd go back, you'd have another 30 or 45 minutes seated meditation, followed by 30 to 45 minutes of walking meditation, and just basically going back and forth on that. And each session, they have some sort of instruction, they have kind of a lecture each day talking about whatever the topic for the retreat is. Like I said before, you'll have meetings with instructors where you can talk about, like on this one, this was my fourth retreat, and even, you know, 2 or 3 days in, I was just really struggling. I noticed that my mind just wanted to, I just wanted to fast forward to the end of the retreat. I wanted to just skip ahead, get to the end, check it off my list of things that I've done, have some sort of great insight, and go back to my life. And so it was a real struggle just slowing myself down and recognizing that and saying, okay, it's okay to feel that way, but I want to be here right now. And so that's the basic structure of the day. And that goes up until 9:30 at night, seating, walking, lecture, work, eating. You're just kind of alternating through all of those. And, the Dalai Lama or more experienced people would say that, you know, all of life is meditation. It's not, you know, you are practicing in a seated posture or walking, but you're trying to cultivate that sense of awareness in everything you do. So when you walk to the dining hall, it's not just checking out and booking it to the dining hall. It's, can I walk there a little slowly and pay attention to what's going on and look around me and actually see the beauty of my surroundings. It makes me think of, you know, in this MBSR course, one of the exercises the instructor gave me was when you're at a red light, just take a deep breath and use that as an invitation to be aware. And I found it so mind-blowing. I would encourage you to try this. I would get to a stoplight and it was like seeing the world for the first time. I saw people walking and talking and laughing and little kids and the trees blowing, the wind blowing the trees and buildings. And you start to realize, like, man, there is so much life in every second. And I'm so quick to tune that out. That's kind of the structure. And I wanted to talk just lastly about the types of retreats, the ones that I have done. There are so many different types of retreats, and that's one of the great things as well. You can kind of find the flavor of what you're looking for. The very first retreat I did was, it was called Transforming the Judgmental Mind. And the man who teaches it is absolutely brilliant. He goes through a series of exercises to try to uncover the way in which our minds judge things and to try and cultivate awareness around that. So literally, like after this, I would keep for a while a log of judgments. So I'd be walking to work and I would log it. I'd like, oh, I saw some dude in a crappy car and I judged him for being a loser for having a car. And I saw a lady who was overweight and I judged her for that. And you just start to realize we are just judging machines. And part of the nature of this retreat was realizing that all of those judgments, when we are projecting that on others, it is it's really an indication of there's something there that we are judging in ourselves, right? Like when I see someone who's overweight and I judge them, it's like, what is the fear beneath that? Is it a fear that I'm lazy? Is it a fear that I'm overweight? Is it a fear that I'm just one step away from that? When I see someone who's driving a shitty car, what is the judgment there? Is that my fear that I won't be enough? Is that my fear that I won't be successful? Is that my fear that other people think I'm not successful? And so he went through in this week-long retreat that was kind of the basis of the lecture of how can we uncover and drop down into these judgments and what that says about who we are. And, you know, when we talk about those knee-jerk reactions, judgments play a massive role. The judgments we have, they just factor in so quickly. And so becoming aware of them and unwinding them, I picture these tangled knots that you're getting rid of, you're able to better understand yourself, better understand your intuition, and, you know, in my view, really get back to who we really are. I think sometimes we experience things in our lives and trauma and different things, and we get these wounds, and then we start favoring our right side or our left side emotionally, and we act in ways that, you know, once we can be aware of, like, oh, I've got a lot of pain emotionally in this part of me. And if you can heal that pain, you can get back to emotionally running without a limp. You know, I don't know if that makes sense, but this thought of just uncovering the different things that have really affected us and caused us to respond in ways that really don't serve us. You know, it doesn't serve me well to blow up at someone at work. That's not going to increase my career, my personal life, or even my satisfaction, fulfillment. So that was the premise of the first one, which was non-judgment. The second one I did is one that's called an insight meditation retreat. And I would say this is probably the most representative. The entire portion of insight meditation, or my experience of this retreat, was just to be aware in every moment. And so when you're seated in meditation, you're paying attention to your breath. And then, oh man, you feel so fucking furious. I'm like, oh man, I'm so angry. I just want to get up. I'm so sick of sitting here. And it's like, all right, great. Can I recognize that impatience? Can I recognize that anger? And can I be okay with it? Can I not judge it? Can I just say, all right, I'm feeling anger. That's what's going on. I don't have to change it. I don't have to get rid of it. I don't have to suppress it. Let me just be aware of it. And I think you'll find usually when that happens, you realize it goes pretty quickly. It may last a couple minutes. It may last 20 minutes. But after that time, it goes away and something new comes along, some other emotion. And a lot of time, you know, I get associated with this. I'm like, I am angry. And I experience anger for 5 minutes, but then in my mind, I just hold on to it. I cling to it. And then I'm angry for days, even though that emotion's gone. It's just in my mind. I think of myself as angry and I stick to it. And so that's a very powerful type of retreat, this insight meditation, where you're literally, I know it might sound boring, which it is. It might sound very simplistic, but it's incredibly complicated to sit and without judgment pay attention to what's going on. And honestly, so often it feels like a thought came up behind me and chloroformed me and just dragged me off, right? I'd be sitting there, my mind wanders, and 15 minutes go by. I'm like, oh man, where the hell was I? And that's okay. You just come back to the present moment and sit. You're just building a muscle, you're just practicing. And it's amazing seeing the things that come up, you know, for me, like noticing so much guilt about mistakes that I've made in my life, about things I did 15 years ago, 20 years ago. A random thing, like the Naval Academy at my sponsor's house, I was sleeping. It was my rotation to go and pick someone up from the airport. And, you know, I just pretended to sleep in and refused to get up, and someone else had to go get them. And so I noticed that. I'm like, oh man, I'm still really ashamed of that. I'm really embarrassed by that. And that's okay. It's just kind of building up that awareness. It's almost in a way like mapping out your mind and starting to see how your brain works and how your mind shifts from one thing to another. And it's extraordinary because, you know, the first day or two, you're exhausted and just, it's so difficult to focus even for a second. And after 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, the sediment in that water starts to drop down and you start to see things more clearly. And that's the factor where I think that intuition really plays a role of starting to feel pay attention. And it's so extraordinary, you know, beyond that work situation, just little things where it's like realizing, you know, like seeing someone struggling with their groceries and actually like feeling compassion and going and helping them when I might not even have noticed them before. And so the last retreat, I've actually done this type of retreat twice. This is the one I did most recently. It's called Metta, M-E-T-T-A, which is just a Pali word that means, you know, you're cultivating kindness. Really just trying to be as kind as possible. Kind to yourself, kind to those around you, kind to those you know, kind to those you don't know who are just you're indifferent to, and trying to work up to be kind towards those we don't like. And this thought of not condoning someone's behavior, not making it acceptable, but trying to build a muscle to still be able to show love and kindness to even those who have wronged us, even those that we find despicable. I think, you know, there's so much to talk about here. If it's of interest, let me know. I can talk great depths about this, but this has been really powerful. This is actually something I've committed to doing for the rest of the year. I have like a daily meditation practice where I meditate each morning and really cultivating this kindness. And what was most surprising, you know, I'd done a 10-day retreat around this. What was most surprising for me in this most recent one was realizing, you know, the whole week is around kindness to different people, you know, to think of the cashier at a grocery store and picture, you know, being kind to them and building up that compassion and kindness towards them and gratitude and things like that. But for me, I realized, and I know I wasn't alone on this, the bulk of the week, actually almost all of it for me, was expressing kindness to myself. And in many ways, that feels selfish. It feels like, oh, I shouldn't do that. But also, I realized, yeah, it's kind of easy for me to be kind to a stranger. I'm great at it. I'm an asshole sometimes to my wife. She's probably one of the few people I'm comfortable enough with to actually be a dick to, you know, but I'm like a stranger. God, I've got good manners. I'm going to be really kind to them. And I saw that was most true for myself. That's where it was most difficult to express kindness, where I know I'm not alone on this, but I have such a strong inner critic. Someone will say something and I just turn up the volume on the criticism. You know, they'll say something that's, you know, honestly neutral. And, you know, for me, I view that as criticism. And there's so many ways in which I'm not kind to myself. And there are so many implications for that, that when we're not kind to ourselves, we perform less. And I know a common response that I have had to this is that, you know, if we're kind to ourselves, we're just going to slack off. We're going to eat potato chips and watch TV all day. And that's something I've struggled with as well, is like, oh, I want that inner critic because it pushes me further. It causes me to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, and it causes me to get into Stanford Business School, and it causes me to achieve, and it causes me in the military to push through these things. And, you know, if what's resonated for me is like when I think of my employees, I know that me being an asshole to them and me just bullying them around, that might work in the short term. I don't think that's a good way to be in the world. I don't think that's going to result in their optimal performance. I'm a big advocate in the workplace that, you know, that phrase, happy cows produce good milk. That if you treat people well and with dignity, and you still hold them accountable, you still have high standards, but you treat them with dignity and with love and with kindness, I believe that most people will exceed your expectations more so than if you're just beating them with a stick. And even more so, that's true for your relationship to yourself. And I know at times it might feel counterintuitive, but I, you know, try that as an experiment. If you try being really kind to yourself, I believe you will perform better. You will perform harder. You will push yourself further because it's done out of a sense of pride, self-respect, kindness, rather than just grinding your gears and beating yourself over the head. And you know, if that doesn't resonate with you, that's fine. But I think for many of us, I think that this is also a trend in the military that's starting to emerge, is that we can be really, really critical of ourselves. And that's something for myself I'm trying to get away from. And these meta or kindness retreats have been very powerful for that. Part four, I'll wrap this up quickly because I know I've gone a little bit longer than I wanted to here. Resources, if you're curious to learn more. MBSR, mindfulness-based stress reduction, that's the first thing that comes to mind. 6-week course, I think 3 hours a night. There's probably many different formats. It is very sterile in the sense that there is no hint, trace, or anything of spirituality. It is very scientifically based. It is very tool-based. It's very, you know, you'll hear people like Tony Robbins and Tim Ferriss and everyone's talking about meditation now and the benefits. So it really delves into that. That is a great gateway. Stanford has a compassion class. I've done that as well. That's great. I did not while I was at Stanford. I did it through someone who learned there and then taught it. But they, if you look up Stanford compassion class, I'm sure you'll find that. That can be offered remotely as well. A couple books. One is called 10% Happier. excuse me. Highly recommend this. It's by an author named Dan Harris. He was an ABC News anchor, he was on air and had a nervous breakdown. That caused him to take a step back from work and really unpack what the hell was going on in his life. And that led him to meditation. The title of the book comes from his premise that meditation is not going to, you know, completely transform you. It will make you, on average, about 10% happier. And it's just a tool set that you can use. It's a muscle you can build, and it's exercise you can follow that can actually make you happier. So 10% happier is great. I really like the way that he tells the stories in that. It's very relatable. This is a, you know, he talks about on ABC, he was, you know, big time coke addict, or not big time, but had done cocaine. It was a workaholic and just doing everything, just really career driven. And so it's kind of a relatable perspective. And then it's not coming from, you know, he talks about sometimes when you talk about meditation, you feel like there should be a pan flute playing in the background. And sometimes people talk about it in ways that are not as accessible and with words and terminology that just don't resonate on a daily basis. So that book is great. 10% Happier, Dan Harris. It'll be in the show notes. The other one that you might like is Search Inside Yourself. It's written by a Google employee who started the Google Meditation Program. It is all about an engineer, a hardcore developer, just logically laying out how meditation works, how to do it, why it's valuable. Again, very sterile. There's nothing spiritual about it. It's very factual. It's very, you know, this is a hyper-intellectual, right-brained person. So if you're that type of person, Search Inside Yourself might be a great resource as well. Yoga is great as well. Listen to Dan Libby's episode. Yoga is a fantastic resource for you. Could be a great way to just, I think actually for most veterans, that might be a better way to experiment with meditation because you're being aware of your body, you're being aware of your breath, but you're also moving and doing some strenuous stuff that might resonate more. And then lastly, email me. Happy to chat about this individually anytime, or email me questions. I can do a follow-up episode. But hope you have enjoyed this. I will be back next week with the more traditional format of interviews with veterans about their civilian career. But wanted to share this just on a personal note. It's something that's very important to me, and I do believe it would be beneficial to the veteran community. So thank you. Have a great week. If you have a moment, leave a positive iTunes review, and I will see you soon. Bye.